Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This was the weekend Americans woke up to something very dangerous brewing in our midst. In Charlottesville, Virginia, we saw a Friday night vigil with burning torches, Klan-type flags, proud and loud and racist, and full-on brawls, assault-style rifles in the streets, death and injuries. But this goes beyond Charlottesville. White supremacists are celebrating the weekend as a kind of victory. The president's muted weekend remarks as a signal of support. This hour on Point, what we just saw in Charlottesville and where it goes. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. People with all kinds of reactions to what we saw, many really woeful reactions to what we saw in Charlottesville. Here's one that was not woeful. Former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke at a rally in Charlottesville on Saturday. In an interview, he said the event represented the fulfilling the promises of President Trump.
This represents a turning point for the people of this country. We are determined to take our country back. We're going to fulfill the promises of Donald Trump. That's what we believed in. That's why we voted for Donald Trump, because he said he's going to take our country back, and that's what we got to do.
David Duke in Charlottesville. Joining me first today from Charlottesville is Sandy Hausman. She's bureau chief there for Public Radio's WVTF and Radio IQ. Sandy Hausman, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
What's the state of mind of the city on the other side of this unbelievable weekend?
Well, I think people are very unhappy here in Charlottesville. This is normally a pretty quiet community. I would not describe it as an activist kind of place. We have lots of retired folks who would count themselves as liberals, and of course the University of Virginia, which is a fairly conservative school. And so having this in our midst is deeply distressing. And of course the car crash that injured 19 and killed one woman has left the city heartbroken. It's just a really bad time for Charlottesville.
Can you just take us back briefly through the course of events? Friday night, what happened? Saturday, what happened?
Friday night, we had several hundred people with tiki torches who marched across the University of Virginia campus. And toward the end of that march, some individuals who opposed their white supremacist views showed up, and there were some fights, fist fights, and people swinging those tiki torches. And police, of course, arrived and broke things up.
They marched to a statue where there were, students around a statue of Thomas Jefferson?
Yes.
Counter-protesters?
Yes.
What happened there?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a very strong feeling here in Charlottesville of protectiveness, you know, a sense that this is our community and we do not believe these things. And indeed, if you talk to the individuals who came this weekend, the white supremacists, very, very few of them are from this area.
And then came Saturday. Here's just a little bit of sound. White supremacists shouting Heil Trump, doing the Nazi salute as counter-protesters chanted in response. You know, the counter-protesters saying white supremacy has got to go. Well, it's kind of just a blur there, but in the midst of that is, hey, hey, ho, ho, white supremacy has got to go. How did Saturday unfold, Sandy?
Well, the rally wasn't supposed to start till noon, but people turned up very early in what used to be called Lee Park and has now been renamed Emancipation Park. That's the location of the Robert E. Lee statue, Robert E. Lee on top of his horse. So those individuals, the white supremacists, were in the park with their Confederate flags and banners and sticks that they would later use for some street fighting. Out on the streets around the park were the counter-protesters. And that was a very mixed bag. You had some extremists there, some left-wing folks who call themselves Antifa, that's short for anti-fascists. And you also had, you know, middle-aged moms who were shouting, scolding the white supremacists, one lady walking around handing out flowers, another guy going around giving hugs. But generally, there was a great deal of hostility, as you heard in that tape, the shouting back and forth, and you would have people coming out of the park in these little sort of antagonizing forays. They would march around as if to provoke people, and there were, in fact, some fights, and police took kind of a hands-off approach, according to some witnesses. There have been complaints about the police not doing their job. That, I assume, will be investigated down the pike, but the police did use tear gas to break up those fights. And then at 11:30, even though the rally was supposed to begin at noon, the governor declared a state of emergency, and the city ordered the rally to move to a larger park, where the chief of police had said it would be easier to maintain security. The demonstrators were given a choice, either move or be arrested, and so they en masse picked up their Confederate flags and their shields and their swords and marched over to McIntyre Park, which was about a mile away, and that's where David Duke and Richard Spencer spoke.
We saw lots of images of heavily armed men in the streets who were not police. How much of that was there? Who were they?
These were individuals who support Jason Kessler. He's the local blogger who organized this event. They were heavily armed. Some of them wore fatigues. They looked very military, but they were guys associated with this white supremacist rally and not part of any official police force.
This is Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe talking about those on NPR's Morning Edition today.
These people all came armed. David, I've never seen so many weapons. These people were wearing better gear than my own state police were wearing. They had body armor, helmets. They were all, people were walking around with semi-automatic rifles through the streets.
There were the weapons, and here's the governor of Virginia talking about what was being chanted, what was being yelled in the streets, talking with the Morning Edition again today.
And David, you should have heard the language in what these people said on the streets, yelling at the African-American community, yelling at members of the Jewish faith. I've been doing this a long time, 40 years. I never in my life have seen such vicious, mean-spirited hatred.
Here's a little bit of that. This is during the torchlit walk on Friday night, nationalists chanting, "You will not replace us," but it became "Jews will not replace us" at some points. Here they are.
You will not replace us! You will not replace us!
Sandy Hausman is with us from Charlottesville. Sandy, what were you hearing? What was being said, chanted in the streets?
You know, the white supremacists were very hostile to the media, and few of us waded into their midst. Mostly what I heard was the chants coming from the streets, which were, Nazi scum off our streets and go home, and general chants against fascism, and a good deal of profanity, I'll tell you that. But you're right, the anger is just difficult to fathom. Shortly after that crash in which people were injured and one killed, a group of the white supremacists appeared on Charlottesville's downtown mall, which is a popular sort of tourist destination with restaurants and bars. And a number of locals surrounded them and said, "You need to leave. We don't want you here. You're not safe here. And some of our friends have just been injured by this vehicle." And the people from the white supremacist group said, "Good. The fewer leftists, the better." So a fight ensued at that point as well, and the four were chased off to where some state police were standing, and the police essentially protected them.
And then, of course, the president on Saturday with his statement on this, many people wanted more. He talked a lot about, he said this was, on many sides, the violence on many sides of the president of the United States.
"We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides,
Sandy, how was that received in Charlottesville, and by whom?
Not well. I spoke with a number of people from Black Lives Matter, part of the counter-protests, and of course they were deeply offended, as you would expect. I think the feeling is that, yes, there was anger and hostility on both sides, but the true violence, of course, came from the white supremacist group. It's worth noting, I think, that at 11:30 today, the president is meeting with his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, and the director of the FBI to talk about Charlottesville, and that is a closed-door meeting. So so they're aware, I think, that perhaps the president was not as diplomatic and was hurtful in what he said.
What's the history here? Why Charlottesville, and what portion of the white supremacist, white nationalists in the streets are local?
Very few of them are local, but the fellow who organized this event is local. And many months ago, he uncovered some tweets that had been sent by a member of our city council, the only African-American on council, a guy by the name of Wes Bellamy, who's very well-liked. Some years ago, when he was living in the Deep South, he sent some racist tweets insulting white people, insulting women.
This is an African-American man.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. And Kessler publicized this widely and then began a drive to get Bellamy removed from the city council. He would walk around town with a petition. And again, there was fighting, fists were thrown. And subsequently, he attracted a number of followers who, throughout the summer, have been strolling around the mall and drawing hostile responses from locals. So this has been going on for a while. And then, of course, a few weeks ago, we had the Ku Klux Klan, a group from North Carolina who came up, and they also met in Lee Park, or the former Lee Park, now called Emancipation Park, around the statue of Robert E. Lee. And what was so interesting was, again, I don't see a lot of activism here in Charlottesville, but 1,000 people turned out to surround that park and to shout the Klansmen down. They had to be protected by police. So, you know, the sentiment in Charlottesville is clearly against this kind of thing. It's, as I say, quite a blue spot in what some would consider a red region.
And Cindy, you know, we saw the rebel flags, we saw the KKK, not the hood stuff, but other symbols, and we saw Nazi symbols. Is that a new element here in Charlottesville's experience?
Oh, most definitely. I've never seen anything like it, but yes, there were definitely some neo-Nazis who were part of the group. They reportedly stopped on the way to town at a Walmart to buy weapons. And the police were called. It was quite alarming to the local folk. And this is another disturbing element in what has happened here.
But on they came. Sandy Houseman reporting on all this for WVTF and Radio IQ Public Radio in Virginia. Sandy, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about this weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia. White supremacists, death and injury in the streets, Nazis, swastikas, the president's response, the country's way forward here. Here's the sound of people screaming after a car rammed into counter-protesters at a white nationalist gathering in Charlottesville. This was Saturday. Video filmed here by Brennan Gilmore and posted to Twitter. At the end, you can hear the car reverse and drive away with its bumper dragging. And here's Brennan Gilmore, who filmed that moment, that terrible moment. Here he is talking with MSNBC.
It was clearly perpetrated by one of these racist Nazis who came to Charlottesville to spread their vile ideology, and he targeted this crowd very clearly. There's no question of anyone who witnessed it that his intent was to cause a mass casualty incident, and it's a domestic terrorist incident as far as what I witnessed.
Yesterday on NBC's Meet the Press, Charlottesville Mayor Michael Signore said that the Trump campaign had encouraged white supremacists to come out of the shadows.
These influences around the country, these anti-Semites, racists, Aryans, Nazis, KKK, they were always in the shadows. But, you know, they've been given a key and a reason to come into light. That's exactly what happened last week.
And here's Republican U.S. Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado on CNN State of the Union yesterday, calling on President Trump to speak out more clearly on what happened about the white supremacist groups and clashes in Charlottesville.
This isn't a time for innuendo or to allow room to be read between the lines. This is a time to lay blame. To lay blame on bigotry, to lay blame on white supremacists, on white nationalism, and on hatred. And that needs to be said. This president has done an incredible job of naming terrorism around the globe as evil, radical Islamic terrorism. Whether it's in Europe or the Middle East, he has said and called it out time and time again, and this president needs to do exactly that today.
Republican U.S. Senator from Colorado, Cory Gardner there. You can join us this hour. What do you come away thinking after this deadly weekend in Charlottesville? Can you believe we've got Nazi symbols, swastikas, armed white nationalists on our streets, emboldened, fired up, claiming it's just begun? How are you processing the fact that the president did not, over the weekend, call out these white supremacists with the simple, blunt criticism that he uses for nearly everybody else, did not call them out at all by name? Van Newkirk II joins us now from Charlottesville, Virginia, staff writer at The Atlantic. His piece over the weekend titled, When Does a Fringe Movement Stop Being Fringe? You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Van Newkirk, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Montgomery, Alabama, Richard Cohen, president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks extremism all over the country. Richard Cohen, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
What can you tell us about who the people were? We just heard Sandy Hausman there in Charlottesville, the local reporter, saying these weren't, overwhelmingly, these were not people from Charlottesville. What do you know? You track all this. Who was it? Who was that in the streets?
Well, Sandy's right. They weren't, you know, just from Charlottesville. They really came from all over the country, California, Ohio, Florida, everywhere. And it was a collection of both new and old white supremacist groups, old groups like the League of the South, the National Socialist Movement, and newer groups like Identity Europa. And they were all united around one cause, and that was their vision of America as a white ethno-state.
You know, we heard David Duke saying that he was encouraged this weekend because, and we're reading the Daily Stormer, which is, I guess, a neo-Nazi outfit, saying they were encouraged as well because the president didn't explicitly, they said Trump's comments were good. He didn't attack us, nothing specific against us, no condemnation at all. When asked to condemn, he just walked out of the room really, really good. This is the neo-Nazi outfit. Do you think they'll... I mean, on the other hand, we had lots of people in the street saying shame, shame, shame to them, and the national reaction has been anything but embracing overall. Do you think they'll take heart from what happened this weekend, Richard?
I do. The Daily Stormer is the largest or most heavily trafficked neo-Nazi website in the world. And they, you know, they endorsed Trump. They celebrated his victory, and they're exulting over the fact that he didn't condemn white supremacy. You know, quite frankly, Mr. Trump's conduct has been bizarre and disheartening. It's so bizarre because, you know, he has the bully pulpit and he's, you know, not taking advantage of it. And it's disheartening because he's allowing the white supremacist movement that he helped to energize, quite frankly, he's allowing it to continue. It's horrible.
Van Newkirk, the White House did come out on Sunday with more explicit criticism here. The president didn't sign that. But we all heard what he said on many sides on Sunday. What have you been thinking, Van, as you watched all this unfold?
So watching this, I think it's actually remarkable when a person like David Duke comes out and says, you know, this statement actually encourages us, is going to help us build. I think any other situation, you look at a U.S. president, regardless of their politics, regardless of what other races might think of that president, and they come out and would explicitly denounce David Duke, right? I think even members of the marches through Charlottesville, people like Richard Spencer, people who consider themselves parts of the political alt-right, they have had the tact, at least, to denounce people like David Duke. It's actually, I think, we'll look back on this as sort of a historical moment, looking at how President Trump has failed over the last couple days to make an explicit statement saying that he denounces white supremacy, that he denounces the goals and actions of the Klan, and has allowed basically just by a collection of different lukewarm statements, allowed the Klan, allowed people on the Daily Stormer, allowed people on these 4chan forums to basically say, okay, we understand that the president is still with us and he's giving us these signals. I think we would want a president who was mortified enough of that to come out and say immediately, okay, that's wrong.
You know, the president may still do that. We don't know, but it's now Monday. You know, even today he could, I suppose, by the time some listeners hear this conversation. How's the timing matter to you, Van?
So I think, again, this is something you would want to happen before David Duke came out and said your statement was implicitly endorsing his goals. I think you'd want a statement as soon as the White House had the implication, had the word that they were going to go forward with this as maybe a domestic terrorism incident, that like Attorney General Jeff Sessions said earlier today. And I think what you would really want is as soon as you saw the car incident, as soon as you had the sort of file, the charges filed for attempted murder, you would say, look, this is not what America stands for, and this is not what our presidency stands for. And we stand against the Klan, the neo-Nazis, the people who are moving through this park, and that has not been done.
Let's go to Linda. Yes, sorry, Richard.
Tom, I just wanted to add something, if I could. I agree with everything that Van said, but quite frankly, I think, you know, the time, condemnation for Mr. Trump is really not enough. He needs to take responsibility for the fact that his words during his campaign, his incendiary rhetoric, has energized the radical right. He needs to take responsibility for that. He can't say, oh gosh, I condemn it, without recognizing that he had something to do with it. So he needs to acknowledge it. He needs to apologize for what he's done. I think he needs to signal that he's going to change direction by firing Mr. Bannon, the person who, you know, created the platform for the alt-right on Breitbart News. And then I think
and
he
called
needs
it
to,
that himself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was proud of it quite incredibly. And of course, you know, Mr. Breitbart News had a fawning profile of the alt-right and Richard Spencer, you know, a year and a half ago. I mean, it's incredible. And the last thing that Mr. Trump ought to do, or the next thing he ought to do, is take some action to undo the harm that he's caused. And what I'd suggest is he start with a directive to all federal law enforcement agencies to take the threat of white supremacy seriously. He hasn't done that. People like Gorka have minimized the threat.
Sebastian
and
Gorka
Mr. Trump
in the White
needs
House.
To do something about it.
Here's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on Fox News Sunday saying, well, you'll speak for himself here.
He missed an opportunity to be very explicit here. These groups seem to believe they have a friend in Donald Trump in the White House. I don't know why they believe that, but they don't see me as a friend in the Senate. And I would urge the president to dissuade these groups that he's their friend.
Linda in Wimberley, Texas. Thank you for calling, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi. I kind of disagree that Trump should apologize because, I mean, I think he'd be well served if he did, but he is such an opportunist. He will never do that. I think the Lindsey Grahams of the world, I think he should go to his congressional peers and say, we have got to rise up. We've got to say something. They've been sitting back for 6 months letting these horrendous things go down, and I'm kind of shocked, you know, that they don't care about our position as a global community, as a partner in a global community.
Who's they, Linda? What's the they you're pointing to?
The congressional Republicans.
Mm-hmm, okay.
I'm appalled that they aren't that they're not standing up against this. I think they're really destroying their brand. I'm not in favor of their brand, but I'm kind of surprised at that. And I think Trump will never apologize. I think he loves stirring up this kind of stuff. He's a complete opportunist, and he should get rid of Bannon. I do agree with that.
I mean, we have some standing up. We've got Tom Cotton, Arkansas, Republican senator here, saying white supremacists who claim to take America back only betray their own ignorance of what makes America so special. He says these contemptible little men do not speak for what is just, noble, and best about America. They have to face what they would deny their fellow citizens, the full extent of the law. Linda, I appreciate your call. Tom, but of course, not everyone's been quite that strong. Tom in Detroit, Michigan. Tom, you're on.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see?
You know what? This stain of racism that's on this country is this country's mortal sin. And then in terms of what happened down in Charlottesville, I mean, this came from, I don't consider him president. I call him number 45. He ran a campaign based on hate and fear, you know, xenophobia and misogynist. And I mean, you know, for him to, he's you know, and I agree with Linda. He's not going to apologize. And I mean, you know, but he has just opened up the floodgates to, you know, let all of this hate and this vitriol and this venom to, you know, come into this society. I mean, it was there, okay? Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you know, he gave them carte blanche in terms of how he ran that campaign to go out here and say and literally do anything that they want. And I'll say this and I'm going to go. No one by the company they keep. Look at how long it took him to, I guess, own up to knowing David Duke. All right, and even this whole thing about it's what, here it is Monday, and this thing happened Friday, and he has not come out and condemned these, you know, fascist people. You know what, if he does apologize, it's too little, too late. The horse is out the barn, and you can't drag that horse back into the corral.
Tom, I appreciate your call. Van Newkirk, you say, your essay says, well, is this still a fringe movement? I mean, surely, in spite of everything, would you not still call it fringe, Van?
Well, I think the point of the piece is that there is never a clear demarcation. When you look at history, the Klan, other white supremacist movements, Red Shirts, for example, they moved very quickly from being members of the fringe. The Klan had a couple members in the woods when the second Klan came about with a couple dozen members. And then all of a sudden, they had a 50,000-strong march to the Capitol. These are things that I think happened very quickly and with the sort of implicit endorsement of people in power. And that's what I think we should be vigilant about. And that's why I think it's so important to look at what the White House is saying right now. Because what happens, and this is, I think David Duke is actually correct in his assessment of the strength of his organization in these times. What they look for is not for people in power to come out and say, we are Klansmen. They look for people in power to come out and basically say, we're not going to stamp out the Klan as, I guess, with as much enthusiasm as we would have before. And that they see that as a signal to start building their ranks, to start putting more people on the ground. They see it as a signal they can put more literature out there and get more recruits. And so I think we really, based on our history, have to start considering this was the largest white supremacist rally or march or whatever in dozens of years. I mean, 500 people. That's a small number nationally, but I think if you are a member of the Charlottesville black community, you see 500 white supremacists, and that's terrifying. That looks like the 1950s and 60s to you.
And a lot, think, plenty yeah. armed. Van, stand by there in Charlottesville. I want to welcome Joshua Green into our conversation, national correspondent with Bloomberg Businessweek. He's author of the new book, Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. Joshua Green, thanks very much for joining us today.
It's great to be with you.
So you've paid very close attention to Steve Bannon, who I guess bragged in a way about becoming the platform for the alt-right. Were you surprised by the president's muted comments on this on Saturday?
Well, not at all, because it's entirely in keeping with the way that Trump has treated the issue of race and violence and discrimination against blacks, Muslims, and all sorts of other groups throughout his campaign. I mean, you can look back, and I cover this in Devil's Bargain, to instances in the campaign where Trump was explicitly called on to condemn alt-right racism, and he refused.
So we haven't heard from Steve Bannon as we speak anyway. With Steve Bannon at his elbow, do you see this as Donald Trump's own internal reluctance to be more explicit on this front? Or is this Bannon whispering in the rear? What do you see going on?
I don't know, but I don't think that Bannon needs to whisper in his ear on this topic, because Trump is already where I think Bannon would want him to be, and that is in refusing to be bullied by what Trump and Bannon would see as the forces of political correctness into criticizing and condemning a group of people who are clearly Trump supporters. I mean, Trump is very reluctant and always has been to criticize any of his supporters, whether or not they're white supremacists. But I think the fact that he's unwilling to do so now is both a reflection of that tendency, but also a clear signal to racists and people who support the Charlottesville marchers that he is secretly or not so secretly on their side and views them as part of his coalition.
You know, we've got people in Congress, some Republicans in Congress who are saying, we heard a couple in this hour saying, come on, Mr. President, say more. Do you expect that to open up? That is there a gap there or not, Josh?
Well, I think there's a huge gap there. And on a lot of issues that Trump says and does things, there really isn't a gap. You know, Republicans kind of privately wince, but they go along with it. And in this case, they haven't. But I think it's interesting to note that despite this criticism from his own party, Trump has so far refused to capitulate and to call out what ought to be a very easy thing to do, to say, no, Nazis and white supremacists have no place in the Republican Party.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking about this weekend in Charlottesville. White supremacists, death and injury in the streets, the president's response, the country's way forward. Richard Cohen is with us, president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, with us from Montgomery, Alabama. Van Newkirk is with us from Charlottesville, Virginia, staff writer at The Atlantic, who's been looking at all this. Joshua Green, out with Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency, his book, looking very closely at Steve Bannon's imprint on this presidency, with Bloomberg Businessweek, joins us from Washington. You can join us this hour. What do you make of this whole weekend? What should police do with armed, heavily armed, white nationalists in the streets? How do we get a handle on this? Have we been leaving it up to clergy and desperate kids in the streets? What now? Here's the sound of it. This is white supremacists on Friday night with those tiki torches chanting the old Nazi slogan, blood and soil, as they headed toward counter-protesters Friday night at the University of Virginia.
Blood and soil! Blood and soil! Blood and soil!
Blood and soil. Here's Sean Patrick Nielsen, a white nationalist, tells the Washington Post on Saturday why he attended the white nationalist gathering in Charlottesville.
I'm here because our Republican values are, number one, standing up for local white identity. Our identity is under threat. Number two, the free market. And number three, killing Jews.
Make of that what you will, but you hear killing Jews right there at the end. Plenty in Charlottesville shouting back here with shame on you. This was at a news conference at City Hall on Sunday, where the organizer of the whole thing eventually fled, demonstrators chanting shame on you. And here are counter-protesters on Saturday in Charlottesville. No Nazis, no KKK, no racist USA. But there was Charlottesville. Kayla in Los Lunas, New Mexico. Kayla, thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom. This is Kayla from Los Lunas. And I'm just calling to comment on the whole thing. I think anyone who thinks that the president is going to apologize is reaching, for one. Because if anyone thinks that apology is going to, number one, be sincere or heartfelt, is just, you got to be either ignoring the fact that he has some kind of deep-rooted racism within himself, or you're ignorant to it. I feel like this is exactly what he wanted, and I feel that the Klan coming out is just an opportunity for everybody else to compare them to Black Lives Matter, and that's just not the case.
Kayla, I appreciate your call. Van Newkirk, Richard Cohen says the president needs to apologize for what he summoned with his campaign themes. Can you imagine that?
I cannot imagine it. And I think for the reasons we've already said, I think Trump has never once really criticized any of his supporters. And to be frank, the people out there in that park are his most vocal supporters. I think they're the ones who are always behind him at every sort of misstep and mishap. And I don't think he's willing to risk the support of those people. As a black man, as a person who has family members who live through Jim Crow, I think it's hard to see, but also it's easy to place sort of historical parallels on what's happening. The Klan, to me, is a terrorist group. And you saw the Klan, you saw groups, other white supremacist groups, they made their bones in society. They became prominent in society because the people in power would not denounce them. Not because they went out and said they were members of the Klan, but because they said they didn't say anything. They did nothing. Yeah. And that doing nothing was always taken as a sign that it's time. And I think right now those groups are taking this as a sign that it's time.
On ABC's This Week yesterday, President Trump's national security advisor, this was General H.R. McMaster, said that the car attack in Charlottesville was terrorism.
I certainly think any time that you commit an attack against people to incite fear
It is terrorism. It meets the definition of terrorism.
But that is not a word we heard from the president. Jacob in Fort Drum, New York. Jacob, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm just calling because my view on this entire issue is this. You had the rally initially, I guess, which was originally, you know, verified and approved by the city when they went there. And yes, there were a lot of, you know, white supremacists within it, whatnot, but you can't control who comes to your rallies. You can only kind of emphasize that they're there. But at the same time, I think people are downplaying a lot of the violence that's occurred on both sides of the issue. Because you had, when initially they got there, people pelting them with, like, fecal matter and other bodily fluids and beating them with sticks and other things as well. And on the other side, of course, you had, you know, them retaliating, doing the same thing. And I think the biggest issue we're looking at or missing here in the entire argument with this entire emphasis is the fact that both sides are very brutally violent towards each other. And I think that people don't realize that, you know, the white supremacists, the neo-Nazis, you know, white nationalists, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, none of it really is any different. They both have these very strong-minded views, and they both seem to be basically at fault for a lot of these issues we're having.
Jacob, let me ask you, if you on one side have racists or even fascists, I mean, you know, neo-Nazis, and then you have people protesting against fascism or neo-Nazism, do you think those are the same?
I will tell you that they're posing the same thing. What's going on is that you have people talking about fighting racism with racism. You know, like you have black people saying, we should hate white people, white people do them when we're down. But at the same time, the reverse, you have basically the other side saying, well, we're here, whatnot, if they love us, whatnot, because we're still here. It's kind of like Canada's kind of saying, you're trying to fight, are you really fighting hate with hate? You can't really fight a hate with hate argument.
Well, I saw plenty who weren't fighting hate with hate, but there was also definitely, and we've seen it before, there's been skirmishes in these streets, people who came prepared to resist neo-Nazis and more. Richard Cohen, what do you make of the moral equivalency argument that the president kind of suggested with his, you know, it's all on many sides, many sides?
Well, look, there is no moral equivalency, and I would point out that last week, we issued an alt-right guide to college campuses, which have been a real flashpoint. And, you know, first to explain to people who the alt-right is, you know, some of the key figures. And the piece of advice that we give everyone, I think it's pertinent to this, is don't give them an audience. Don't provoke a confrontation. You know, organize some alternative event. We always think that that's important. You know, I have no sympathy for the anti-fascist. On the other hand, I think you need to recognize, you know, kind of what's causing this, and that is a resurgence in white supremacy that's been fueled by Mr. Trump's campaign. You know, Dr. King would often say, hate begets hate, and violence begets violence. It's all a downward spiral until someone has this good sense to break the chain. Unfortunately, that person with good sense is not the president of the United States.
But Van Newkirk, I mean, the Antifa people, they're not going to separate rallies. They're waiting right in here. And there were plenty of others as well. You know, we saw those students that really taking it there on Friday night, pretty brave around that statue of Thomas Jefferson. We saw clergy and more and regular citizens of Charlottesville just saying no to this. But there were people there who were prepared to push back. What about the equivalency argument that gets made there, Van?
Right. Well, I think, again, you know, the members of the Antifa are not the predominant members out there. They are out there. I think people, you know, disagree with their methods and their willingness to use violence as a first tactic. But again, those aren't the majority of the people out there.
Our caller says Black Lives Matter is a sort of a, you know, equivalent to what we saw with the white supremacists on the streets.
I think that's just false. I think you look at what Black Lives Matter members and their leaders have said regarding the use of violence, regarding what their goals are, they are simply not equivalent to the views of white supremacists. I think you can disagree with the political goals of a group, but to say that someone is equivalent to a group that essentially wants to eradicate people of color or simply, I guess, deport them at best, there's no way you can say those views are equivalent at all.
Peter in Boston. Thank you for calling, Peter. You're on.
Yeah, listen, first, I'm probably one of the rarities that I actually voted for Trump.
You're not a rarity. He's president. What do you think about what we just saw, Peter?
Well, I got to tell you, fellow that got charged should be prosecuted to the maximum of the law. Anybody that does things like that.
James Fields driving the car into that crowd. Okay, yeah.
absolutely is in the same. Now, one of the things absolutely probably does any type of violence should be prosecuted, and that's what's going to happen. I think Sessions has mentioned that. One of the things I just heard when I kind of recollect when Black Lives Matter, there was like pigs in a blanket, let's burn the police. You know, so they are not. You know, it's such a dichotomy now that you know that you know what is the you know are they equal in it? Two sides, extremes. By the way, just
I don't buy the equivalency argument. I've seen a lot of Black Lives Matter protests at this point, and that you can find that. But the main thing is respect us, please. Don't beat on us. Our lives matter.
Absolutely, and the David Duke is such an irrelevant factor. He tried to play this up, and during the campaign, Trump didn't. Majority of Trump people had quit. They're fringe. Next week in Boston, they're planning this. So-called some of them going to show up. They're trying. The problem is those people. He can't even get elected. Nobody's going to vote.
I mean, you can call him irrelevant, but there he was in the middle of this, sort of gaining prominence on the back of it. Peter, I appreciate your call very much. One more right here. Joe Lee in Omaha, Nebraska. Joe Lee, you're on the air.
All right. Thank you, Steve. My opinion is we can't be scared by people driving cars into the counter-protesters. We need to not be afraid of these white supremacists, and we need to be staging more counter-protests. We need to see protests all across the country against racism and against hatred, and if the government's not going to do anything, the people need to take a stand. The people need to take to the streets and do something about this.
Jolie, I appreciate your call from Omaha. Richard Cohen, what do you make of that prescription for response?
I think it's great. You know, the social norms in our country are fragile. You know, they're built up over time from our family, our churches, our schools. And when they're frayed, it's hard to put them back together. And that's why we need a full court press from our clergy, from our schools, from our community organizations, from everyone to try to restore a sense of shame to racism and try to get across the idea that our country is great because we're united, not because we're divided.
But how do we keep this from turning into street
fighting? We can't depend upon the president to do that. Say it again?
How do you keep it from becoming street fighting all over the place? I mean, you said some people welcome.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are hotheads on all sides. There's no question, anger and racism provokes anger and angry reactions. You know, the advice that we always give people is don't show up at a white supremacist rally to protest. Hold a rally somewhere else. Don't give these people an audience. Don't make it a spectacle. That's advice that I wish everyone would follow.
Boy, it's hard. It's clearly hard for people to resist getting out there and saying no to it. Josh Green, you've written so compellingly about Steve Bannon and the president. Take us into the White House and what the conversation there might be now.
Well, look, this is an issue that came up during the campaign intentionally. When Hillary Clinton gave a big speech in August, end of August in 2016, shortly after Bannon was hired to run Trump's campaign, in which she called out the alt-right for racism, anti-Semitism, violence, and explicitly called on Trump to condemn this. And that speech actually, I think, had the effect of introducing the term alt-right to a lot of people who didn't understand it. And at the time, it looked as if it would be potentially a very damaging speech to Trump, because Clinton, in her speech, read some of the headlines from Breitbart News that Bannon had overseen, saying horrible things about blacks and Jews and all these different ethnic groups. And yet, it didn't cost Trump politically. And not only did it not cost Trump politically, but over the next month, Clinton's lead actually narrowed in the wake of that alt-right speech. And I talked to Bannon. I described the scene in the book, but I talked to Bannon about a month later, and he told me, he said, this is a quote, he said, "We polled the race stuff, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't move anybody who isn't already in her camp."
Doesn't matter, so meaning it won't hurt us.
Meaning it doesn't hurt us, that Trump can have these associations, can explicitly, implicitly, or even explicitly endorse violence and associate with people like Bannon, who, as someone said earlier, viewed Breitbart as the platform for the alt-right, that he could have these associations, and not only would he not be forced to apologize for it, but it wouldn't even hurt him in the polls.
But that makes it sound just opportunistic politically. Is Bannon a white nationalist, or was he just riding that?
Bannon claims he's not a white nationalist, but I want to make a point. I think this operates on two levels. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, Sure, it can be politically opportunistic. You're, you know, sending dog whistles and the like to your supporters. But that's not mutually exclusive with Trump himself also believing in a lot of what these white nationalists are marching for. It doesn't have to be an either or kind of thing. Clearly, Trump is loath to criticize any of his supporters, including the people in Charlottesville. And the fact that he can get away with not condemning them and maybe even benefit politically as a result of doing that is kind of morally appalling. But, you know, I report on this episode in the book, and clearly they had done polling to measure this, to test this, and decided, nope, we're fine. We don't need to apologize for this. They didn't apologize for this. Trump never apologized for this during the campaign, and of course he won. So the lesson that's been reinforced in Trump's mind is that when the mainstream media and the political establishments and the forces of political correctness come and call on you to condemn the sorts of things that we saw in Charlottesville, you don't have to do it. And so Trump, so far at least, has not.
Van Newkirk, now we've got swastikas in the streets of the United States. Do you expect more of this?
I think I do. And I think the one promising thing about what happened in Charlottesville is the fact that there were so many regular people who were on the streets, who were standing between vulnerable folks, who ended up being the ones who were injured in the car accident and the woman who died in that act of domestic terrorism.
Heather Heyer, let's name her.
Heather Heyer, yes.
Gave her life there.
She gave her life. And I think that is the one thing. Again, like I said, the lack of an announcement and just the political winds, I think, we'll see a greater presence of swastikas of these things that people only told about in stories of boogeymen. But I think the fact that regular people are fighting is a good sign.
Van Newkirk, staff writer at The Atlantic. When does a fringe movement stop being fringe? His essay from over the weekend joined us from Charlottesville, Virginia today. Van, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Richard Cohen, president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, with us from Montgomery, Alabama. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, Tom.
And Joshua Green, national correspondent with Bloomberg Businessweek. He's out with his new book, The Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. Joshua Green, thank you very much for joining us today. Come again.
Thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate it.
Oh, what a weekend. Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thank you for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.